We are live on Blog Talk Radio for Falcon Zone. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York, and joining us this week, no, he's not missing in the desert. He's back on the show. He's Coach Haywood Hill. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing spectacular, actually. As I told you right before the show, the official computer here and one of my favorite possessions in the world crapped out on me a couple days ago. So we are trying the first show on the brand new equipment, and I'm already excited.
Well, that's great that we're up and running.
Yes, absolutely. I was I never feared whatsoever. I want to thank the people at the Best Buy and Hiram, and of course the Geek Squad for giving us the hookup and making sure everything was a go. So shout out to them. If you're in the Hiram area, definitely go check out the Best Buy. I'm sure my face is on the wall. I'm there so much, but a lot of stuff we want to get into, and just a handful of things going on. Obviously, we're going to preview the game coming up later tonight because it's part of our pick'em package as we're bringing that back. But without further ado, let's just start right at the top. Now, we know a couple months back, Ezekiel Elliott's ex-girlfriend was going to accuse him of some domestic violence charges, and he denied them the whole time. He even said people like Michael Irvin were present when all the said things were supposedly happening, and it looked like it was going to blow over. He had text messages saying before the draft that she threatened to try to ruin him a little bit and all that. It seems like they've all blown over now. And I know as a former agent and former coach, you've had to deal with kind of these scenarios. If you were either a friend or even the agent of Ezekiel Elliott, how would you have handled all this?
Well, I think his whole team did a great job in how they handled the incident. When you take in consideration that the NFL is still investigating, I'm quite curious to see what else they are trying to find or what they will find. But I think overall that it was handled well by his collective team. And again, he was exonerated. One of the things that I found very interesting was when his father put out a tweet basically stating that, he's been vindicated, and I'm paraphrasing the actual tweet. But with that being said, he said had his son done any of those horrific things that he had spoke of, that he would have pressed charges against him himself. So that spoke a lot about what was going on.
Absolutely. And I'm glad he was able to clear all this. And like I said, from the very get-go, he said, hey, I didn't do any of this. I'm not sure where they're getting this information, but, it is what it is, and it'll all work out in the wash. So, for all the Dallas fans, you're not going to have to worry about it. It looks like Zeke, as far as his legal troubles, is going to be on the field. I think he tweaked an ankle or something the other day. So we'll have to see physically if he's ready. But overall, he's going to be on the field. I look forward to seeing this man play.
Yeah, with all of the guys that got drafted, it's going to be very interesting to see what they do now there into the regular season. Now, preseason is behind them.
Absolutely. We get to see what happens when you actually face NFL talent in a regular season game that counts. Let's see. Before we get back into Kaepernick, we'll go through some of the other stuff. The Sam Bradford trade, obviously with Teddy Bridgewater going down, Minnesota was already considering options anyway as far as backups, but I guess the opportunity presented itself to trade for Sam Bradford. Now, the way this trade is written out is Sam Bradford is going to Minnesota. Minnesota is giving up a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick that could turn it the fourth-round pick could turn into a third if they make the Super Bowl, if the Vikings do, and if the Vikings win the Super Bowl, it turns into a second. What are your overall thoughts on this trade?
I thought it was way too much, personally. Again, every player has a value. I don't know if I was a general manager, if I would have given that much for Sam Bradford. I think he's a very good football player. However, there are some players out there that are not signed right now. And you have to look at it in a short-term base as well as a long-term base. Again, I don't know if his productivity in Philly would have given me enough leverage to want to make that deal in Minnesota, especially with giving up a first-round pick and a fourth off the top that can actually be converted to a second and or a third in that second pick option. That was a bit much to give up, knowing that you're going to have Bridgewater back in 2016.
Oh, sure. And before we get a little bit more into they're not real sure if Bridgewater will be healthy enough, because this was such a horrific injury. It's one of those we've never seen this combination as far as on a football field type thing. So they may be looking into the future as though if Teddy doesn't quite come back, or if he can't come back at all, they at least have another option.
Well, with that being said, also taking consideration what they just gave up, they gave up a first round pick and also a fourth round that can be optional second or third. So if you're looking
right.
futuristic, then why not just go ahead and start looking at quarterbacks that you might want to take in 2017?
Right, and maybe they looked ahead to that and realized that they're a good enough team they wouldn't get a shot at, Deshaun Watson or whatever, may not get a shot at some of the other guys. But Colin Cowherd brought this up the other day. Basically, if the other pick is a throwaway pick anyway, possibly, potentially. It was just thrown in just for value. Basically, they're saying our first-round pick this year is an established quarterback. We know what Sam Bradford is. We know what we're getting in trading for him. These first-round picks, I mean, it's like 35-40% of them don't pan out anyway. So, I mean, in a way, it's a safer pick to kind of trade a first-round pick.
Well, again, like I said, I felt that there were some other quarterbacks out there that are most definitely worthy of being a 32, in my opinion. And I don't know if I would just would have rolled the dice so quickly on a Sam Bradford. I mean, you know, he has shown some energy here and there, but he's bounced too. And there's a reason why he's bounced. There's a reason why the Rams let him go to Philly. And there's a reason why Philly had no problem with trading him. And they made sure that they got what they wanted out of that deal in that trade. Now, in these first four games, I think that's going to start – the telltale signs will begin to show themselves quickly. What they have built in probably is, well, how much does he know the system? See, when you make a move like that, you got to make sure a quarterback can plug and really play in your system now. You don't have room, nor do you have time, even with the veteran quarterback who began to learn your system. So, again, these first four games will be very critical as to what they did in their decision-making process. I just think it was giving up a lot for Sam Bradford, and you don't have a long-term contract with him.
Right, right. Yeah, his contract is up after this year, I believe. Now, this got me thinking, especially how it ties into this show, if, according to this, because technically value and worth are two completely different things. You can value yourself at whatever you want to, but your worth is what's – or the value is what somebody is willing to pay for that good or service. At this point, the good – services and or whatever are Sam Bradford and his skills. If he's worth a first round pick and a potential anywhere between second, third, or fourth round pick, what do you think Matt Ryan would be worth? Is he worth two ones or a one and a two or two twos, or is he worth less than Sam Bradford?
Well, again, it goes back to what you said earlier, is what people would be willing to place the value on and be paying for that value. Again, let's look at his productivity over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Let's look at where the Falcons have been. I mean, how many times have they made the playoffs in the last 5 years? Where are they? Where is he in the numbers? I mean, I don't particularly like to just depend on numbers, because numbers can be padded. I mean, numbers can be skewed.
Right.
They are real. They are factors, but they're not the only thing when you're looking at something as high in the value of a quarterback. Now, that doesn't mean any other player is less than value, but the quarterback position has always been a very top dollar position with inside the National Football League. So again, I mean, I don't know. I don't think I would be willing to give up a first round pick or anything between rounds one and three, unless that player, I mean, you're talking about someone that would have to be a Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers for me to be willing to
right.
make that kind of move. Because again, you have to look at where you see yourself. And again, if you're losing a quarterback, do you not put yourself in a position where you can? Because, again, everybody knows that you're looking for a quarterback. Everybody's going to skyrocket the market values of any of their backups or starters that they have. But certain teams, you know, that you're not going to even be able to approach with that type of – you could have gone to New England. You could have gave them five ones to get Tom Brady. So it goes to show
right.
you you know, what are you putting value and worth into? Again, like I said, you know, my concern, and if I would have been the general manager of Minnesota, one of the things I most definitely would have stood on the table for is we only have him for 1 year. We don't have a long-term deal with him. We don't know what's going to happen throughout this year. He very well might be hurt before halfway through the season. Then what do we do? At that point, we've given up value and possibly losing this player anyway. So even if he stays healthy, at best they go 500. Is maybe a little bit more than that. Was it worth giving up two picks like that? If you remember, Atlanta struggled with that when they bumped up so high to get Julio Jones. Look how long it's taking them to recover. They are in the process of doing so. But again, a first round and a fourth round pick that could possibly be a two or a three is huge for an organization to make that move on. That's just my personal opinion. I just don't know if I could give up a one. I mean, it would have to be somebody that just has a track record very long and very consistent in a productive type of way.
Oh, sure. And I think in that short category, you know, we could say if it was Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, you know, those kinds of guys, it's like absolutely. If you're the Buffalo Bills and you feel like you're just a good to great quarterback away from, you know, possible Super Bowl contention, I would absolutely believe Rex Ryan would give up even two or three first-round picks to get Tom Brady. But it really does just factor into where you think your team is going to be. And, I mean, I'll bring it up later on. If the Falcons were to try to move on from Matt Ryan, I think I have a landing spot for him in the next couple of years. But I'll make a note of that.
I think I know exactly where he's going to land. I think I have an idea where he's going to land.
Yeah, I have a pretty good idea, and Falcons fans aren't going to like it, but it's going to make that team a Super Bowl contender continuing on. They already are, the one I'm picking. But
right.
Like I said, I'll make a note of that so we can we'll go on and get into it. The team I come up with is if for some reason the Falcons decide to move on from Matt Ryan, or Matt Ryan decides he's had enough of Kyle Shanahan, and if they're not going to get rid of him, then he's out the door. I feel like the Arizona Cardinals could make a move to replace the 37-year-old Carson Palmer, and that would automatically put them almost in the same boat they are now, of being one of the strongest NFC teams as far as contention for the Super Bowl.
That's interesting. I can see that. That is a plausible move for Arizona. But the team that I'm thinking that he'll end up with is Tampa Bay. I don't think he has a problem with playing a backup role at that point. I think Jameis Winston is doing a great job. I think it puts him right back in his comfort zone with Dirk Cutter and Coach Mike Smith. And I think that'll be just a comfortable landing for him, and he doesn't have to do a lot of transition in his move.
If you can, I think we can hear the faint sound all the way from St. Louis. I believe Mr. Reggie Walker just threw his TV out the window if you heard us say that.
But I can easily see him being in Tampa Bay, with being very comfortable at the point of being a backup at that point in his career, because he's spent a lot of years right now. He's a little long in the tooth himself. And I think he'll look at where he can comfortably fit in, where he doesn't have to start over in a system versus just going out and reacclimate himself to a system.
Yeah, Dirk Cutter down there. I mean, he's a pretty good whisperer, and he would happily go, Matt, come on down. That's not a bad thing. I got him going to one coast. You got him going to the Gulf Coast, basically. And either way, that's pretty interesting. Falcons fans, don't hate mail on us, but if you want to email the show, 3endzone@gmail.com. We do answer all the emails. We appreciate all you guys send in. At Team Impact Media, if you want to catch us on Twitter, or at the Impact 99. And what am I forgetting? I feel like I'm forgetting. Oh, if you want to catch us right here on the show, remember to try to keep it as PG as possible. I would hate to have to hit the dump button and throw you off in the middle of your speech. But, you know, we do have a lot of kids that listen to the show. So if you do call in, 347-826-7448. For some reason, our stat guy got the number wrong on his last post, so I'm going to correct that since I'm looking at it. But 347-826-7448. Remember, try to keep it as PG. PG-13 is pushing it. But, you know, keep it clean. Call in. Tell us we're idiots. LSU or geniuses. I think me and Coach are good with either. And as we start to get those messages sent in, I'm sure we've both been called better and worse. So, it is what it is at that point. Let's see, moving on. We want to talk about Tony Romo. He's got a lot of free time lately because he's not practicing because of that bad lower back vertebrae he has. He sent a text message to Seattle defensive lineman Cliff Avril. He may be a linebacker either way. And that text said, "We'll see you guys in the playoffs." Now, first of all, that's pretty good trash talk because usually Tony doesn't say a whole lot as far as I know. And two, a lot of people wondered what Tony thought he might be back. Now, as of right now, Jason Garrett, Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, anybody that happens to have a star anywhere near them has not officially put Romo on the IR, even the short term. First of all, what do you think of the tweet or what do you think of the text message, Coach? And then we'll get into what do you think the status of Tony Romo is?
Okay, let's talk about the tweet first. That's in good spirit and good competition. Every player is a warrior, and that is just his warrior spirit speaking what his body is not capable of doing right now. As far as them taking their time to put him on the IR list, it is a strategic move. He will eventually end up there. I don't think that there's anything that is going to show an indication of him not being able to play very little this season. They already had predicted he would probably be out 8 to 10 weeks anyway. I think they wanted to make sure that they're crossing all their T's and dotting all of their I's as an organization to make sure that they have all of the final information in from the team doctor as well as other doctors as well as the surgeon to see how he's going to progress. Honestly, I just felt that Tony was never even healthy from the first one. I think that he came back too soon. I think that was part of the problem. I think what happened was a freak accident, but I don't ever think that he was healthy from the first time. If you remember last year, he went to London with this same issue to play in that game. So, again, we're talking about a broke back. We're not talking about a broke finger or a broke toe. We're talking about your vertebrae. So I just don't think that he was ever healthy last year. I think that they kind of escalated his recovery. And I think now they have to make some harsh decisions on what they want to do going into the draft of 2017. I don't know how much more Mr. Romo can take. I think he's shown himself as a great warrior and an athlete on the field. But, again, his body is starting to tell the signs of wear and tear. And so I think they're going to wait. And in the ninth hour, they will, they will then officially make the announcement that they're going to put him on IR, which did at that point mandatorily puts him out for 8 to 10 weeks.
Right. Yeah, that's the earliest he could come back at that point. If they decided to move on from Tony Romo, just to bring this name back up, could they maybe extend a hand out to Matt Ryan as the backup to Dak Prescott or as the potential starter for another year to eventually switch with Dak once Dak's ready to take over full time?
Again, I feel that there are still some quarterbacks out there, and I would name one that I feel would fit their system right now, and that would be one Michael Vick. I think that he's a quarterback that's out there. I don't know if he's been picked up as yet. I haven't had a chance to look at any of those transactions as of today.
No, not yet.
But again, he is a guy that has no problem playing a backup role. He can help your football team. He's still a winner, and I still feel that he can compete at that level. As a starter, to be exact. That's why I was kind of shocked that Minnesota didn't entertain it. I was very shocked that Dallas did not entertain it. Dallas feels very comfortable with what they have in Dak Prescott. The question is going to be that if Tony Romo is back in that 8 and/or 10 week window and Dak has been playing very well, what do you do? Do you stay with what's working or do you go back and play what has been convenient to you? And so that's another part of it that you have to take into consideration. But, again, Dallas feels very comfortable. I think Coach Garrett will open up the season, open up the first four games, allowing Prescott to kind of comfortably work himself into the offense. high percentage pass. He has, you know, he has an excellent running back behind him, a very very sturdy and aggressive offensive line that can move people off the ball. So I don't think he's going to have any problems. I think he's very comfortable. And I think you're going to be able to see Prescott do some amazing things with the Cowboys. Again, like I said, you know, I don't think they're in a hurry to make any moves right now because they're comfortable with what they're seeing.
Right. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Even though it's just preseason and that is what it is, but, I mean, they like what they're seeing in this Dak kid. Turns out he may be the best quarterback of the bunch, at least as far as the rookie year that we're all picked this year. But, you know, time's going to tell. Everybody keeps saying how good their offensive line is, and maybe it is to a point, but why do quarterbacks keep getting hurt in Dallas if they're so good?
I think, again, you know, the difference that you have now is that you have an aged Tony Romo against a young, fresh, bigger body Prescott. And I think that's
right.
That's one of the things that's going to help them. I mean, you know, he's a little more athletic. He has legs up under him. He has a strong arm. He's a bigger body than Tony. And again, like I said, I'm not trying to take anything from Tony Romo because I think he's a very good athlete. However, you know, I just feel that he's never recovered. So if you're not really fully recovered, I think it's hard for you to be able to produce at that level when you're playing, you know, you're playing, you know, a little bit tweaked more than being put out there.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, it's another one of those time will tell as far as that. Now, I want to move on now to what me and Reggie started last week about the Colin Kaepernick situation, and me and you have kind of briefly talked on it. We talked more about that this really should be more about the cause and the things that he's trying to stand up or sit down for at this point. It wasn't about – he wasn't trying to slight the military or veterans or anybody necessarily by sitting during the national anthem. He probably chose the wrong method initially. The taking of the knee now, neither one of us had a problem with. But, you know, we kind of got more into the issues he's trying to bring up, you know, the violence in the street, the sometimes kind of rogue police officer, you know, causing deaths that may not have been necessary, or just the social changes, social issues that we actually need to start talking about and not just seeing on the news channel every day. And that's kind of where we got into it. And I know you had a couple points to bring up on it, so I'll give you the floor.
Thank you. Let's start with Welcome to America. I'll open up this part of it with saying Welcome to America. Welcome to America because this is what America is all about. If you look at the history of America, you're looking at a country that founded itself upon protest. And what we're looking at here in this form of protest is his constitutional right. Now, people might not like the method that he chose, but that's what America is about. It's about being able to have freedom of speech. It's about being able to express oneself. And protest is never to be made comfortable. And I think that's where this gets misconstrued. Protest is about bringing awareness and hopefully to bring change. So on one hand, you have a group of individuals that say, hey, we feel that it was very disrespectful at what he did. But on the other hand, we still have not had a public forum to talk about in depth and detail what the anthem stands for. I think one of the things I found very interesting in paying attention to what's not being said is that no network, as of to this date, to my knowledge, has ever offered to do an exclusive interview with Mr. Kaepernick and to ask him directly, what do you feel about this? What's going on with it? I think that the organization put him in front of the media. It didn't seem like to me that Mr. Kaepernick was trying to even cause a scene, because I found it very intriguing that with all the people that were standing on the sidelines, that you would have had this come up with that. So I found that to be quite intriguing. And what comes from that now is what I think no one wants to discuss. No one wants to discuss those other stanzas. No one, and I think that, I'm going to go out on a limb right now and say that if given the opportunity to have the exclusive interview, I think you will find Mr. Kaepernick probably saying, if we're going to sing the national anthem, sing all of the national anthem. How did we get down to a stanza? Where did that decision get made and why? And I think that's part of it. I never heard him say that he was disrespecting the flag. I think he was challenging what we stand for as Americans and asking us as Americans to take a good hard look at ourselves in the mirror. And I didn't find anything wrong with doing that. I think that these are conversations that are the pink elephants in the room. We all know that they exist. But the question is when are we going to take a hard look at that and be willing to sit down across the table and have that discussion to work into the direction of making sure that these things are not happening and based on the principles from which our country was founded.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would definitely agree with that. And it is kind of interesting that nobody, you know, whether it's the four-letter network, whether it's one of the big news stations, you know, exclusive interview. Nobody, I don't know that anybody's tried to reach out and find out exactly what he's trying to say with this. All we know is the 18-minute kind of press release, press conference he had, I believe, in the locker room, where for 18 minutes he went on about his cause and he read through all the stuff. And, you know, there's been players across the league that have tried to join the efforts, and some of them have even pulled back from it and all. I actually know that this Sunday, the 4 o'clock Eastern game, it'll be on a lot, maybe even a local market. The Miami Dolphins are going to play the Seattle Seahawks. And from what Richard Sherman, I believe, said earlier today, the entire Seahawks roster is going to take a knee during the national anthem, not as a sign of solidarity or nothing like that, but to also, you know, raise awareness for the types of things Colin's talking about. So, you know, once again, leave it up to sports to have to take this torch and carry it to maybe get some kind of social change out here.
Well, again, I think it is going to be in solidarity, to be quite honest with you. I think that at this point in time, young athletes today are starting to take into consideration the power that they have. Now, everyone mm-hmm. doesn't have to agree with that, but that's what makes America America. It's the fact that he has a constitutional right to do so. And that's the thing I think people are looking – they're so caught up in the method and not looking at the cause. And I think that's where the problem comes into play, and that's where the lines get blurred. I mean, does he have a constitutional right to do so? Yes, he has a constitutional right to do so. You don't have to like that, but that's a right that he has. And so moving forward, I think, again, if there was an interview done, one of the things I think would come out of this is that you'll find that he would say the national anthem is to represent our country. It is sung at every major sporting event, even the Olympics, and it's echoed around the world, okay? The national anthem is to represent who we are. So if we don't sing all of it, then are we not slighting ourselves, or who, or what are we saying to the world? What are we standing for? And I think that's the thing, that's the part of it that doesn't want to get talked about. That's the hard part of it. It's like, yes, we sing the first stanza, but there are other stanzas that go along to this song. And so now, what are we representing? It didn't become an anthem until 1931, okay? So at what point from 31 to now, these discussions happened in the academic arena prior to that. Why? Because there were some other songs that were brought up as contenders for the national anthem. God Bless America and America the Beautiful. So now does that come back into play? Does that come back into play now? Because we have to be willing to look. We are mature enough now as a country, although we're one of the youngest in the world, but one of the, if not one of the most powerful, if not the powerful country in the world, that we have to start taking hard looks at where we are. And this is one of those looks that we can no longer run or hide from. Unfortunately, we have to sit down and start having this dialogue. We have to start having these conversations. And I think Mr. Kaepernick did not bring the attention to himself as much as someone pointed it out. And at the point that they did, the conversation began.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I like that not only did you, but Reggie brought up last week, too, the simple fact that there are extra verses to a lot of songs we have. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, especially being raised around here, when you would go to church, most of the time people only sing the first verse of Amazing Grace. There's actually 3, 4, sometimes 5 or 6, depending on the version. There's all these extra verses that nobody knew about. So at least, if nothing else, he's brought attention to those. And I agree with both you and Reggie that maybe it's about time we start considering America the Beautiful or one of those as our national anthem. Not to undo history. I'm not trying to erase things that happen. I'm definitely not one of those kind of people. But in order to show our social change and to show that we're evolving as a civilization and not standing still or going backwards.
Right, absolutely. What do you do with players who come from different countries?
Right.
What do you do with players who have different faiths? I mean, all of these things are the it's the melting pot of America. These are all of the movable parts. And so what happens if you have a player and what I found very interesting was that he had a tremendous amount of support from the military. Because
right.
when he began to slowly lay out, for the lack of better terms, the agenda of why he was sitting, he spoke of the veterans. It wasn't just police brutality. He covered a lot of social issues in a short amount of time. So it means that he gave
right.
great thought to what he was doing, and more importantly, he thought about what he was going to say at the time that he was going to have to respond. He spoke the truth. He spoke of how
mm-hmm.
veterans get legs blown off and come back, and they have mental illnesses, and they end up homeless and a whole lot of other things. So I think he just really took on some things that we can't deny that really takes place. I mean, and we have the historical data to prove that.
Exactly. And by far, this will not be the last time we talk about all this. I think it's going to continue, whether he's a backup quarterback, whether he's even in the league anymore. I feel like he may be one of those leaders that tries to really push this. And, you know, like I said, I may not necessarily agree with how he started, but now that we're actually hearing his side and watching the evolution of what he's doing, I think he's dead on trying to get this changed and trying to at least raise awareness for what's going on.
Well, I agree 100%. The story will continue. It's to be continued.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we try to tackle the big issues anyway, but this one's definitely, I mean, it's a lot more fun to me to talk about than Deflategate or any of that other crap that usually gets brought up. So I'm just happy that football finally has an issue that we can all rally around and really get our discussions out here, because we always tell people this is a platform we use to not push agenda, but to talk about all sides of issues. People are welcome to call in and talk about them if they want to. And, you know, as long as you keep it clean and don't get derogatory or trying to attack people, just talk issues. I like this show being that platform.
Absolutely. I think social media as well as multimedia has given everyone an opportunity to have their uncensored voice heard.
Absolutely. And like I said, this will definitely not be the last time we talk about it. We'll probably continue more about it as it develops next week, especially to see how the entire Seattle Seahawks roster, if they all take a knee for Sunday's game, see the awareness that'll raise and such that way. But we're going to power through a couple more issues here. Rob Ninkovich of the New England Patriots has been suspended 4 games for a substance violation. Apparently it was a banned substance. And as we were talking beforehand, I think he bought it at a general nutrition store. I don't necessarily know if it was a GNC. He really never said. It was kind of the guy that wrote the article who said it was just your basic normal supplement store. But from what Rob said, he's just going to take his 4-game suspension. He apologized for everything. And the substance that he's being banned for was not listed on the package, according to what he said.
Well, with that, that's another thing that I'm interested in finding out what's going to go on with that, because with players having banned substance lists, they have to be very careful about what they're taking. And again, what I found interesting, again, something that was not said or has not been said, is why if he bought this from a reputable general nutrition supplement store, that he doesn't go after them with his legal team and try to get his 4-game paycheck back. I mean, that's a quarter of the season, and if he felt that he didn't do anything wrong, then they should be held accountable for at least letting players know, especially a player in the National Football League or any athlete that will be dealing with banned substance, that they should be going to the manufacturers trying to find out what's going on with those supplements that they're taking so they make sure that they're not caught in that position.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And up until you brought it up, I didn't even realize that, you know, if he felt like that it was because it wasn't listed that, you know, that he had no prior knowledge whatsoever, he thought it was safe, then I never realized you could actually go back after the company like that. But that may be an option for him. But, you know, he seemed to take it right on the chin, and we both kind of agreed that if you – immediately try to take something on like that, just, you know, just let it go, that there may be more to this. Like I brought up the example, sometimes you don't fight a speeding ticket because maybe you were doing more than speeding when you got caught and you don't want the investigation to reveal the rest of what you're doing. So maybe there's more to this. He's just going to take his four games and move on with it.
And you very well could be true about that. It could be more to the story than meets the eye.
Could be. I mean, or maybe him being a Patriot, maybe the Patriot said, you know what, take the four games off, you know, go take a vacation with Brady, and we'll see you in game five.
It sounds like a plan for him right now that's going to work.
Right. I'm sure they're drinking fruity drinks in hammocks on some remote island we can't pronounce. Next thing up, the 2017 draft is going to be in Philadelphia. And as I said, and this is totally my opinion, not the opinion of the entire show or you or Reggie for that matter, I feel like being in Philadelphia, it's not the most opposing fan-friendly place. So I feel like attendance is going to be down, and it may be a long time before they get it back after next year.
Well, it's interesting. I think the NFL is trying to do its due diligence in moving the experience of the draft around. Hopefully more cities will get nominated and be selected for that process. I think that it's wonderful for every city, to major city in America, to get an opportunity to have the draft come in and have those players come in and get that experience. I don't know what it holds for Philadelphia right now. Again, you know, historically, there have been issues in the past, from my understanding, from a fan base. With visiting teams coming to Philly, if you remember when they had Old Veterans Stadium, they had an actual like a mini court, if not almost a precinct within inside the stadium itself, because there were so many issues with the fans in the past. And I don't know if that still holds true today. My understanding, Oakland has some of that same issue as well as a city. So again, hopefully, Philadelphia, as the city that will be hosting the next draft, will make sure that they do their due diligence in making people from around the world who participate in this, and more especially those organizations, as they come together in a large conglomerate to their city, that they make them feel welcome, safe, and they make themselves a user-friendly city, being that they are labeled the city of brotherly love.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I hope I'm wrong on all that. I hope that it goes just – absolutely spectacular in Philadelphia. I hope fans are encouraged to come up there because they'll feel safe and they'll have a good experience and everything. It was brought to my attention just a few seconds ago that both Oakland and Philadelphia, who, you know, like we said, have had reputations in the past about some incidents revolving around the home fans' treatment of away fans. These are two cities of which our own Reggie Walker will be visiting as a Falcons fan this particular season. These are two of the away games he's picked. And he also broke the news last week that when he goes to Oakland to see the Raiders and Falcons play, he will not be wearing the Falcons colors. He will probably wear a generic middle-of-the-road shirt to ensure his safety.
Yeah, and I think that's a smart move. But, again, that's something that the NFL needs to address and take very seriously. I mean, a lot of fans – I mean, this is a sport that now, with through technology and travel, people are now your true fans. And I'm not – that's not slighting anyone. because of economical reasons can keep you from doing so. But those fans who have the economical wherewithal to travel to these other stadiums to support their team should be able to do that in a very safe environment. And I think at some point the NFL is going to have to really hammer down and address any of those issues that take place from a fan's perspective with those home organizations. No fan at any given time should feel unsafe or uncomfortable in coming out and supporting their team, because overall it's the National Football League. That's what sports is all about. But if you can't find the proper security, and if you can't have fans feeling safe, then think about how much revenue you're losing when you have other visiting teams come in, and that's your issue. You never want to be labeled as a organization that can't seem to protect others as they're in the presence to there to enjoy the game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, I hope everything does go extremely well, that Reggie has a good time when he goes to these places, that the draft is very successful. But, you know, this is another social-related issue, kind of, sort of, like you said, that we hope the NFL is doing the right things to address so that these kinds of incidents don't happen as often as they actually do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, you know, you're talking about lawsuits. You're talking about wrongful death even possibly. You don't want to entertain those type of things. You don't want to be a city that has that type of reputation, because there's revenue that's being lost. And so I think that the owners as well as the NFL should take a very hard stand in making sure they eradicate any of those behaviors and actually prosecute anyone that participates in such illicit and lewd behavior.
Exactly. Now, a couple things that have just been handed down just a couple minutes ago. Jed York, who is, as far as I know, not related to me, but he runs the San Francisco 49ers, he has announced that the – I don't know if it's the Jed York Foundation or if it's the 49ers in general. I believe it's the 49ers are going to make a $1 million donation to two Bay Area groups to help bridge the gap and address social inequities. So here it is, Jed York kind of stepping up to the plate. I don't think he felt like he had to, but he steps up to the plate because of the things Colin Kaepernick has brought up. He's trying to address the situations over there in the Bay Area.
Well, I mean, I think that it's a move in the right direction, whether this was damage control or whether this was heartfelt. I think it's a move in the right direction at this point. It's a move in the right direction. And again, as we just spoke of with Oakland and Philadelphia being known as cities that have harsh reputation with visiting fans coming in, you don't want to find, in the same token, you don't want to find yourself as an organization where you have a lot of people outside of your brand new facility, year old facility, I think at best, protesting and being and that type of distraction going on. So now that conversation can start. Hopefully not only the money is being put in place to help bridge those gaps, but now, and hopefully some dialogue will take place as well, because that's much needed.
Absolutely. And of course, the other thing just handed down just a couple short minutes ago, Packers head coach Mike McCarthy and the Packers organization, with which you might be a little familiar in the past, announced they have partnered to each donate $100,000 to the Green Bay Police Foundation.
Okay, that's wonderful. I'd like to hear, I'll be more interested to find out what the funds are going to, the allocated funds are actually going to go to once they actually, you know, give the funds to the police foundation. At that point, what will the police foundation do with those funds, and how do they get them distributed amongst themselves as a department? And then also, how do they reach out to the community with those funds as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this is two leaders of two different organizations in the NFL that have decided they want to step up to the plate and try to address these issues head on, as opposed to waiting for something to happen.
Well, it sounds like, again, that Mr. Kaepernick's silent protest is beginning to take a now trendy, if not triple, effect.
Exactly. I feel like they won't be the only ones. We're probably going to hear some announcements within the next couple of days of other teams doing similar things. Now,
hopefully.
Let's see. I think we've done almost everything. We were going to make a Super Bowl prediction tonight, but you and Reggie both said you really couldn't come up with anybody because, I mean, it's still preseason. And like I said, that was kind of the whole point I was going to bring up is that a lot of people are doing Super Bowl predictions, which is, I don't know, just kind of ridiculous because nobody's played a down of football yet. Now, as we have the pregame on here at the studio, within 30 or 40 minutes, somebody will be playing a down of actual football. But just for the sake of it, my Super Bowl pick, in case anybody wants to hold me to it or run to Vegas anytime quickly, as long as you split it with me, you can use my pick. I got Seattle and New England. I don't know why. I feel like Seattle's going to rebound, and I feel like New England is not good. They're actually going to enjoy the Brady break so that when he comes back, the chip is going to be twice as big that's on his shoulder. And I feel bad for, I believe it's the Browns is who they play in week 5.
Well, I will go as far as to say this, and I made that statement last year. I've always said that there are organizations, and I look carefully at the organizations. And this year, the reason why I can't go out on a limb and just predict someone so soon is because it's about 8 teams that are going to be in the hunt for the Super Bowl this year. This is going to be probably one of the most exciting NFL seasons we have had in a very long time. And I'm predicting I am predicting that if you get up to go get a hot dog, you're going to miss one of those spectacular plays. It's going to be a lot of close football games this year. I think that that's what you're going to see. And I have about 8 teams right now before the first snap is played that I feel is going to be in the hunt for the Super Bowl this year. I think it's going to be wide open. You always have your traditional teams that – seem to somehow always be consistent playoff teams, Green Bay, New England, some of those teams. But this year I'm looking at Kansas City. I'm looking at Oakland. Believe it or not, I think Jacksonville will be in the hunt this year in the playoffs.
I agree.
There are a lot of teams out there that are right there on the cusp of making those moves and are going to be right there. And I just think that if you're just going to have to just wait. I won't even be able to make that prediction until somewhere with the last 4 games of the regular season, to be quite honest. I think it's going to be that good, that much good football play this year. I think it's going to be very close games. I don't think anybody. I'm not. I mean, there are a couple of teams that I feel that there might be a few blowouts with, possibly, but not many. I'm not going to give over four blowout games for the whole entire season of all 32 teams.
I don't know if I'd go that far, because I can see a team like. A team like San Diego getting blown out more than 4 times. But, I mean, I do agree that the level of competition and the parity in the league is making it to where almost every year, instead of the same 5 or 6 teams that are in the hunt, it is more like 10, 12, 14, sometimes half the league, 16 teams have a legitimate shot all the way up until that last week.
Yeah, I mean, I really do see a lot of teams. They were in their infancy. Arizona will be one of those teams that will be back. I mean,
right.
The list goes on and on of some teams that – and what I want the fans to understand, you must understand that you still have guys that are going to be coming back off injury reserve and off the PUP list. So these teams are going to get better as the season goes along. So now if they're starting to play backups that can – play in tight games and exciting games and down-to-the-wire games in the first 8 weeks of the National Football League schedule, imagine what they're going to look like on the back end of the schedule because they have that experience under their belt now. So now tough decisions are made I even feel that there are going to be some guys possibly released that had very good football games, but they have better players that are coming off injury reserve. So this year the talent level in the National Football League is probably going to be the best it has been in quite some time. That doesn't mean other years we haven't had talented players. I think organizations have structured themselves now to where you're going to have a lot of good football play, and they were just waiting on the 2 and 3 years for those guys to mature. If you remember, I told you veterans now are not 7, 8-year players anymore. You know, veterans are almost coming out of rookie. You got to think rookie contracts are long now. So by the time a player re-ups for that first real NFL contract, they've already been in the league 3 or 4 years at that point, which kind of puts a buffer in you for teams to build now, knowing that they still have that cushion financially to work with players as they prove themselves. So, you know, that's one of the things that people fail to realize about the National Football League. When they draft players, when they comprise these teams, the thing that they're looking at is this player going to get better over the next season or two? Are they progressively getting better? That's a large piece of this now. So I think it's going to be exciting, guys. I mean, really, really hold on to your hats because you're going to get your money worth, whether you're sitting in front of the TV in comforts of your home or you're out at your local establishment, but even more importantly, if you're in the stadium themselves, you're prepared for a lot of great football.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I was correct. Week 5 for the New England Patriots, they're going to be in Cleveland against the Browns. So say a small prayer for the Cleveland Browns in Week 5.
Well, it'd be interesting to see. Let's see how Cleveland comes out the gate. You know, maybe New England might be in for a shock. I like I said, right now, I'm just not in the position to put anybody over anybody right now because there are a lot of great athletes right now playing in the National Football League, and a lot of organizations have a lot of those great athletes.
Well, maybe not on such a major scale, but as we move into our pick'em games, we're going to pick 4 games each week. Of course, the Falcons game will always be one of the 4. And, you know, it's that small time each week where I guess you will put somebody ahead of somebody, just not on that grander scale, right?
Absolutely. We can go right into that.
Let's start with the first game that's going to happen here in 35, 40 minutes as we watch Bob Costas talk to Trevor Siemian. Good for Trevor Siemian that he's getting this interview. But Carolina is visiting the Denver Broncos in a rematch of the Super Bowl, even though a lot of players say it's not a rematch because this is not for the Super Bowl, but it is a regular season game. Reggie has already given me his picks. I'll throw those in as we get to them. He has Carolina in this game, and so do I. Who do you have?
I have Carolina, too. I think that Denver is struggling tremendously at quarterback. They don't have that continuity in their offense right now. I think their defense will stay close in the game, but I don't think their offense can put up enough points to beat Carolina. I think there's a huge chip on the shoulder of Carolina quarterback Cam Newton, and Cam is going to light them up for a lot of yards. And just Carolina as an organization just has a lot to prove. They have a lot to prove in this situation right now. So expect Carolina to do their due diligence when they go into Mile High.
Absolutely. So, as what typically happens when we agree.
It's funny because it's true.
At some point, we'll find a better one than that one. But, hey, it's a homer pick. Next game up, obviously, is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be in Hotlanta against the Falcons. Who do you have in this game?
You know what? This is a toss-up game for me. I think both of the teams are pretty much at even keel. I think that Atlanta probably has the edge on this just because they're at home. They have a lot to prove. They have to come out against a divisional opponent like this. So I think I'm going to lean toward Atlanta to pull this off. But, however, if they don't come out, the way they win this is that they must come out and they must get in the red zone and score quick, fast, and often. They cannot go down and end up with field goals and 3-and-outs. Matt Ryan, this has to be his debut game. He has to come out against Tampa making a statement, so I'm giving it to Atlanta.
Well, obviously Reggie agrees with you, even though he's very real as being an Atlanta fan. He's not a homer, but he says Atlanta a couple weeks ago, I think last week when we talked about the NFC, we pretty much said that we got Carolina winning the NFC South, and then the other three are kind of in a pick a name out of a hat. I think we gave the slight edge to Tampa Bay, and then we actually had New Orleans, and then Atlanta is the fourth best team. But, I mean, I agree. All three of them are an absolute toss-up. I got Tampa Bay in this one. I really like their emerging young defense. I feel like Jameis Winston has showed in the last, 20 games, including preseason, in the last 20 times we've seen him, he's really making this evolution. To me, he could be better than Cam. He plays a lot like Cam, only runs when he has to. He's a very good leader. Dirt Cutter is not going to set him up for failure. And his three top receivers are all at least like 6'4", 220, which are matchup nightmares for an already bad secondary that Atlanta has. So I got Tampa Bay.
Okay, I can see you.
But
I can see that point. Like I said, the only reason I can look at Atlanta is because it's a home game for them.
Right.
Had this game been played in Tampa Bay, I'd have to say Tampa Bay. Again, I agree with you. I think a lot of it's going to have to do with the way Matt Ryan comes out. If they're going to give him high tempo, I think there are some things there that give Tampa Bay an advantage. One, because he played in a dirt cutter system, so he knows his deficiencies, as well as Mike Smith, who now is their defensive coordinator, knows how to get to Matt Ryan. So I know it's going to be one of those things where this is the litmus test for Matt Ryan. He must perform at such a high level that he dominates in this game. This has to be the game that shows he's a $100 million quarterback. This has to be that game because he's going against people who know where his Achilles heel is located. And so now he has to prove that he's built out of Teflon. He has the nerve of steel. He's going down and he's scoring. So this is not going to be an easy game for Atlanta, but I do just give them the edge because of the home factor.
Absolutely. And I totally see your side of it that way, because the NFC South a lot of times is decided by the home team as opposed to the away team, you know, stealing a victory.
Right, absolutely.
That brings up the next game, which is, make sure I get it, I want to get the home team right. It is the New York Giants visiting the Dallas Cowboys. I have the Giants in this one, and so does Reggie. Do you think Dallas can pull it out?
No. I think that this is going to be that game that, again, you have to give Prescott. He's going to be fast in this game. I think he's going to be a little anxious in this game. I think Dallas is going to have to pace themselves in this game. But I think that New York probably has the more seasoned team overall. So I don't see Dallas pulling this one off right now. If it was someone else where I felt that it was even keel, yes, but I think the Giants have a little bit more where they are going into this than Dallas as of right now. So I have to give it to New York.
Absolutely. I got their division, the NFC East or whatever, down to these two teams. And until I see Dak Prescott in a regular season game, even being a Cowboys fan like I am, I can't pick them yet, because I do think the Giants are going to bounce back this year. And Eli Manning, to me, still has the best mechanics of any quarterback in the league. And he actually has more than one receiver who won't drop the ball consistently now. So, I mean, I feel real good about the Giants' chances in this one. If this game happened in week 6, week 7, week 8, I may go the other direction. But this early, without seeing Dak in a regular season game, yeah, it's the Giants.
I agree.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
So we have two homer picks out of three games, and I can already tell we're not going to have a third. The last game is the New England Patriots visiting the Arizona Cardinals. I will go ahead and say, even though I'm not homering out, I have the New England Patriots in this, and Reggie has Arizona. Who do you got?
Actually, I have Arizona in this game. I think that New England has a comfort zone with Tom Brady. I think Tom Brady is a catalyst to their offense, a mainstay and a fixture. And although they are an organization that does an outstanding job, and I mean that, an outstanding job of making sure that they do their due diligence with their personnel, I just feel that particular position, without having a quarterback who has taken enough snaps in regular season games for them, because Tom Brady is such a durable quarterback, I think that right there is the one thing that hurts them a little bit. Now, are they prepared? Absolutely. You better believe New England will come in prepared. But I think Arizona, again, like I said with Atlanta earlier, this is their test. This is that test game. They have to measure themselves, not their entire season, but they have to measure themselves right now in this game and make a statement right now in this game that they want to find themselves in the Super Bowl as a contender or in the hunt for the Super Bowl this year.
Absolutely. And as we just crossed over into the one-hour mark, just a couple Falcons things we're going to get into. We're going to move straight into our Falcons coverage and break them down just a little bit. The Atlanta Falcons have finalized the 53-man roster and practice squad, and there was just a couple kind of surprises, kind of not really. The main surprise that I found was that as good as Tyler Starr played in the preseason, I mean, to me, he played a lot like Corey Beardman does. He was not retained on the 53-man roster, nor the practice squad. You know, Corey Beardman was also cut from the Bills, so maybe the two of them can link up and play somewhere else. But also, I don't remember his first name, but McKissick, he's a wide receiver who also is a dynamic return game guy. To me, he's the reason why Devin Hester is no longer on the team. And it was a surprise to me that he didn't make the 53-man roster. It was a bigger surprise that he cleared waivers, and then no surprise at all, they stuck him on the practice squad. And then the last kind of not really surprising thing, I think it's about a year later than it should have happened, quarterback Sean Renfrey, who was number 4 on the depth chart, was not retained. He was let go. I believe he may sign with the Bears in the next couple of days.
Okay, I'll tell you what I found interesting. I do find that one player ended up on the practice squad. I think he was a dynamic return guy for him, and maybe they're just saving it. What I found interesting was that I felt that he was a better player than Eric Weems, and I was a little shocked
right.
that Eric Weems was able to beat him out because I have not just seen that type of work in him. Or I mean, he has a body of work. But that body work, again, if you heard me talk earlier in the show, speaking of consistency. So I think this young man that they put on the practice roster, you get more value out of him and the luxury of the fact that he's not a bigger salary on your roster. Now, another thing that I found interesting in Atlanta's move is that they did something very interesting, is that they kept a lot of defensive players. And I know that they went 9 on offensive line, and I think they went 9 at linebacker. Which is very interesting. That is a tremendous amount of linebacker play in the hybrid defense that he's going to run. So Atlanta is going to be depending a lot on their speed and guys that can cover and can help cover with that secondary.
Wow, must be a lot of rotation-based stuff then if you're going to keep in speedy guys all the time.
Absolutely, absolutely. He's going to – those guys are going to be in and out. You're not going to be able to keep up with the numbers, so you better have one of those numeric roster sheets in front of you when you go to the game, because these guys are going to be in and out with a flash. He plans on putting the pressure on with fresh bodies.
Hey, absolutely. It worked in Seattle, and it's worked anywhere else he's implied it. So, you know, I look forward to what Coach Quinn's going to do. Of course, that brings up our overall preseason assessment. For the most part, I hope that the preseason, it was so vanilla that they couldn't make it shake out right, because in the last 3.5 games of the preseason, they looked like the same Falcons from last year to me, just with slightly different faces. They couldn't tackle. Matt Ryan couldn't move the ball. Just when they did get chunks of yardage, it was usually a Devontae Freeman, you know, burst run, or it was a Julio Jones over-the-middle slant. Or something like that. It just, the secondary was terrible. The return game was giving up big yardage. They were missing field goals occasionally. I mean, obviously it's preseason, so a couple of those guys aren't even on the team anymore. But, I mean, the preseason to me looked like the same old Falcons to me, and that team's not going to cut it this year.
No, absolutely. I agree with you. I don't think that team won't cut it. I won't go as far as say it will not. It won't cut it. But I think that what you have to understand about preseason, it gives you an opportunity to look at the guys that you have and before you make those final cuts. And you want to make sure that you're giving the best possible evaluations to those guys, as well as you place it against your injury. Now, again, with the way Atlanta structured themselves on the offensive side of the ball as well as the defensive side of the ball, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with this personnel. Remember, personnel can change every 2 to 3 weeks. So, again,
right.
You got to think about all of the players that they still have on injury reserve. They have not even come in and played as of yet. So, the biggest thing now is just trying to keep a job from week to
yeah.
week. How do you justify keeping this player here? So, you know, again, acronymically, one of the, you know, catchphrases for the NFL is not for long, not for long league. So, it's going to be interesting to see what Atlanta does. And this game, that first game they play, is going to set the tone for where Atlanta is going to have to move itself and shift itself quickly with its personnel. But I think Coach Quinn has a good grasp on it. The team has a good grasp on it this year. They're not learning earning while they're learning, as I like to put it, like they did last
right.
year. I think they've had the whole offseason to now kind of digest, look at film, to assess themselves as individuals and as units as well as an organization. I think now the time is now for them. You know, the fruit has ripened, and so now Atlanta will have to stand out. And I think what you saw in those last three games was just an opportunity to play other players to make sure that when we make these cuts, we are very sure that we're okay with the players that we cut. Somebody has to go, but we want to make sure that we got the film to justify our decisions.
Exactly. And got two quick things we're going to hit on. We're going to figure out a game plan for how they can defeat Tampa Bay here in a minute, but I want to end on a high note, even though this next question is going to be a high note. I posed the question to you earlier, and I wanted to get your response as well on here. Is Coach Quinn safe this year? Is his job safe?
Absolutely. I think Coach Quinn has nothing to worry about. I think this is the actual first year where he'll be able to coach his team, where his philosophies were put in. I like some things he did in the offseason with a lot of team-based building activities. With the Marines and some other things that he did. Matt Ryan even footed the bill for the receivers to come in the offseason and do some things as well to help build that continuity. So I think it's a different Atlanta football team. This is probably the closest they've been to each other in a while. I think he's going to kind of take the chains off of them and they can get exciting. But, yes, I think he's good for another 2 years. I think this year and then the first year that he goes into the new facility. After that, then year three might be something that we can talk about as far as questioning where he is.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said earlier, I feel like if Arthur is holding a meeting and across the table from Arthur is Coach Quinn, Matt Ryan, Coach Shanahan and the GM Thomas Dimitrov, I feel like of those bunch there, he would look at Coach Dan Quinn and say, "You have benefit of the doubt. The rest of them have got to show me something, or you know, we're going to do something different at the end of the year." But yeah, I agree. Dan Quinn's going to at least get 1 year in the new stadium, which when I saw it just last Saturday was coming along pretty nicely. I don't know if I'll get a chance to take a tour of it, but I mean, it's going to be a really nice, really high tech. I still think it's unnecessary, but it's going to be a really nice stadium. It's going to be a really fun attraction. Hopefully it's like Turner Field where it attracts even non-sports fans or non-football fans in this case to come and have a good time at least.
Yeah, from my understanding, I don't know how true it is in its design. I have not seen all of the schematics of the stadium as it's moving toward closer to its final phases. But from my understanding, they're going to be able to have the experience of having suites there in which people can actually spend the night and sleep. Okay,
yep.
So that is confirmed to be true. So that alone within itself brings about a different type of experience.
Well, that's the last I heard was that was a proposed thing. I don't know if it's been concreted, so to say, yet, but I did hear that option may be available to make it more of a destination event as opposed to just a in-and-out retail type experience.
Right, and that would be very interesting. That would be one, you know, huge concept to bring to Atlanta when Atlanta's one of those cities, I call it, you know, basically the LA of the South and the New York of the South. I mean, now it's an international city and it's a city that rarely sleeps. So to be able to give the fans of whether they're visiting teams and or just the home team, that experience says a whole lot as to what Mr. Blank thinks about the Atlanta Falcons and what they're doing with this new Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Sure, absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, I'm going to look more into that, and it'll be a little less than a month next time I'm up that way. So if I hear anything, I'll definitely bring it up on here, and I'll definitely let you know on that. That would be a really interesting thing. And, you know, I would even consider, you know, maybe going up there to stay one night. As long as it's not – If it's the same price as some Atlanta hotels, then maybe not. I'll just buy my ticket like everybody else. Now, given that particular thing, given that the hotel tax in Atlanta helps pay for and fund the stadium, I guess if you reserved a room at the new stadium, I guess in a way you would be helping to pay for it, right?
I would think so, based upon those terms and conditions.
Good for them either way. If, even if they just propose this and don't pull it off, I like, you know, turning it into a destination as opposed to a retail type experience. Last thing, like I said, we're going to come up with a small game plan on how to defeat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Right off the top of my head, I would say you got to play Jameis kind of like you do Cam. They're slightly different players. They both like to stand tall in the pocket. They run when they have to. I think the best way to contain them, though, is pressure early, make him speed up his reads, make him only have a chance at one or two reads. And as far as defensively, they got a lot of young, quick guys as well. So, to me, if you could slow the game down against Tampa Bay, as far as slow their defense down, I think those are the best ways to beat them. What do you think?
I agree. I think that let's start defensively for Atlanta. I think a lot of fresh bodies, a lot of speed, a lot of moving, what we call on the defensive side of the ball, Jameis Winston's off his spot. Get him off his sweet spot. Don't allow him to set his feet. He has a powerful arm. He's very strong. He's very athletic. But make him throw that ball across field. Make him throw it across his body. Make sure that he pays every time that he releases the ball legally. I think and when they do that, also Atlanta has to take into consideration they want to make sure that when the ball is thrown, their whole defense moves like a school of piranhas, that they're hungry and they're trying to have three and four people around the football every time, whether it's a run play or pass. For Atlanta, offensively, they have to get in the red zone and dominate. They have to go downfield. Matt Ryan has to be willing to stick his head in to get those 2 or 3 yards in critical third down plays. He can no longer sit there and toss the ball forward and hope that the running back or the receiver will pick those yards up or the tight end. If it's a 3rd and 2, if it's covered, Matt, you touch it and you go pick it up.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. And, you know, special teams is special teams. We'll see how that particular thing shakes out. But, yeah, I agree that any time that New Orleans, Tampa Bay, or Atlanta play each other this year, I believe it's at least at this juncture, absolutely coin flip. It just depends on who gets the early advantage and who can maintain that. And I know that sounds pretty generic, but as far as these three teams, they're pretty equal across the board.
I agree, and I know Atlanta has made some changes at kicker, and that's going to be interesting as well to see. But special teams will play a huge role in this, and what you have, I think a lot of times what people fail to realize about special teams, and special teams play such a huge, intricate part of the game, is that it's really actually your first offensive play and your first defensive play. So with Atlanta
right.
Going against Tampa Bay, you want to make sure that you get them down and they start on the 20, if not behind the 20, every time out, and make Winston have to go the long way. Don't ever give him a short field to work with. Make him have to make those plays, and you'll find them in third down situations quickly. And in doing so, you got to go and you got to crash down on him fast.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And speaking of new kickers, I'm going to mention it on Panther Zone, which got moved to tomorrow. Tomorrow sometime, it'll drop tomorrow afternoon. Former GSU Panther kicker and punter, I think he has a lot of school records. Will Lutz spent most of the summer with the Baltimore Ravens, obviously because they have Justin Tucker. They released him. Also, they were waiting out Justin Tucker's contract demands, which apparently they were okay with. But Will actually signed to be on the practice squad for the Saints the other day. Then he was told he was moved to the main roster, which was followed by them releasing Cortland Finnegan, the cornerback, and then they released Kai Forbath, who at the time was their number one kicker. So congratulations to former Georgia State Panther Will Lutz, who is now the starting opening day kicker for the New Orleans Saints. That makes 3 Panthers currently on the 53-man rosters of NFL squads.
Well, that says a lot about that program, and good luck to those young men and a very bright future for them as well as they start their NFL careers.
Absolutely. He's a good kid, and he's a phenomenal kicker. So they said his workout was just – they had never seen anything like his workout. So, I mean, because Sean Payton even said early in the season like this, they have all kinds of people in and out just to do their due diligence in case, you know, in case Kai Forbath hurt himself in week 3, they just pick up a list and go call that guy or call that guy and don't have to worry about working people out. But they said – they had no intention of signing another kicker, and Will came in and blew the doors off the place so much that they said they forced our hand. We had to hire him and get rid of our other guy.
Well, that says a lot. That says a lot about his due diligence and his work ethic. It says a lot about the program that he was in, and that's what I tell people all the time. If you're out there, we will find you. It doesn't
Absolutely.
Matter where you play. It's what you do while you're there.
Absolutely. And that's going to do it for us this week. Do you have any plans this weekend? Anything special you're doing?
No, I'll be keeping up with football. It's that time of the year now. And now that everything is done with the NFL right now, and at least as quiet as we move into the first week, it'll start looking at all college players and what's going to be up and what 2017 is going to bring to the table.
Absolutely. And in case your ventures ever take you out to a Georgia State game, let me know. I can introduce you around.
I most definitely would like that. Thank you.
And, of course, this weekend is the Falcons 5K, which benefits the it's Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, and it's also the Atlanta Track Club, I believe, that's all partnered with this. Myself, my mom, and I think a friend of my mom's are all going to participate in that 5K. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's the first one that me and my mom have done together. So if you see some crazy-looking people that look like they're going to pass out early Saturday morning up in Atlanta, we're probably okay. Just let us keep going and don't hit us with a car. But that's going to do it for us this week. So, Coach, it was great having you back on. Obviously, we'll have you back on the next couple of weeks anyway. It's good. Hopefully we'll get the three-headed attack that is me, you, and Reggie here in the next couple of weeks. I know there's some good discussions coming up, but appreciate you being on.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me, Jerry.
And we'll see all you guys next week. Obviously, the Falcons game is at 1 p.m. start. I believe it's on Fox against Tampa Bay. If you're at the game, send us your pictures, your thoughts, your tweets, your comments. I'm Jeremy the Impact York for the coach, Haywood Hill, and for King Atelian, Reggie Walker. We'll see you guys next week on Falcon Zone. Go Falcons!
Yeah, okay. BAM! What?!